Today on this spotlight episode of the Nerd Outcast podcast, tornado season is coming. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bastian, and as I said just a moment ago, this is a spotlight episode. These episodes are different from my normal shows. They tend to be shorter in length, and they break from my normal format. There are no outcasts for this. It's just me and another gentleman on the mic today to talk about something interesting happening in the nerd community, specifically here in Chicago. My guest has been on before, and his name is...
Byron Hatfield.
Hey, Byron. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, as people may have been able to guess, or... maybe not. We are going to talk about Game of Mobile Homes, a sketch parody show going up at Public House Theater, written and directed by Mr. Hatfield himself. Byron, so real quick, before we jump into the meat of the show, what type of nerd are you, real quick?
Ooh, am I allowed to be a universal nerd?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm, so definitely book nerds, Terry Pratchett, which we were just talking about before we started recording. Certainly video games, crunching on Destiny right now, trying to decide whether I'm going to get Advanced Warfare.
How do you like Destiny?
I like it a lot. Cool. I know a lot of people are complaining. For me, it rides a perfect balance with the MMO and single player, because I normally am a single player guy. I don't do a lot of online stuff, and I'm actually playing the PvP and the Crucible, and I'm actually having a really good time with it right now. So,
nice.
Yeah, the three person fire team. Not to go off on Destiny on a podcast, clearly not meant for that. But the three person fire teams are working very well for me and my small cadre of friends that I also play with as a grown man.
Nice. Well, let's bring it back to Game of Mobile Homes. How would you describe this show if you had to describe it in just a few sentences?
Ooh, besides hilarious, it genuinely, so I do a lot of satires, it's kind of one of my things, and this show is taking all the elements of Game of Thrones, and saw how perfect it works in a hill setting, because all the blood, violence, family feuds, everything else, it was a perfect way to satirize it.
And for those who don't know, it's Game of Thrones, but set in a trailer park, correct?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. It is literally the cast of Game of Thrones taken, put it in Westeros trailer park. So it's Eddie Stark, Bob Baratheon, Katie Stark, the Clannisters. So they're all taken. They're all sort of run through the grist mill of becoming much more ridiculous versions of themselves and redneck versions. And, you know, Bran always runs around on top of the trailer. And they're like, get off the top of the trailer, Bran! So it is exactly that.
So my first question would be, why Game of Thrones? Other than being a hit HBO show,
brilliant. It is a fantastic thing that a lot of people connect to. For me personally, it's because the show came about in two ways. One, I just love Game of Thrones. I'm the guy, you know, I read the books back when they were... there was two of them out, and I remember reading the first one in just a single sitting. I absolutely adore this the entire story, and I love what Game of Thrones has done. So we're doing season by season per show. Mm-hmm. So this show is the first season. I'm doing it because I love it, and I'm also doing it because I grew up in the foothills of Appalachia. And so I'm very familiar with the setting, and it was we use the term south of, Carl Drogos and those guys, instead of across the sea, they live south of the river.
Okay.
And where I grew up was a real thing, like south of the river trash is really what you would call like a certain element of people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just such a natural confluence. And the place it came from, actually, this show existed very suddenly out of a spark while my wife and I were buying furniture. Because we were buying a couch and love seat, and the guys were like, hey, you know, you could pay today. You got, you know, 6 months, same as cash if you really want it. And we were like, well, we were just going to pay for it. And they're like, well, you know, just think about it. And we were like, well, I mean, okay. I'd rather not spend that money. That, like, we'll do 6 months or whatever. So they leave. They're like, well, we're going to go run your credit and stuff. We're like, okay, good. And they walk away, and my wife turns to me, and we were like, little do they know, a Hatfield never pays their debts. Suckers.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute.
We need to go home and write.
Yeah, it really was like, ha, 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 like a Clannister. Or like a Lannister. We're like, Clannister. Like, okay, we have to write this show right now.
Were there any other settings up other than a mobile trailer park? Was there anything else that you were considering to set this in, or was that always the number one idea?
It was it. I think the minute, like, my wife named Westrose Trailer Park, and the minute she came up with the name, because I always wanted to put it in a trailer park, and the idea of, like, a real house being the thing that they're all fighting for. So King's Landing's the real house on top of the hill. It's got wooden walls and fancy shingle roof. And the idea of the granite basement as opposed to
the Iron Throne.
The Iron Throne, exactly. So it's, you know, everything just sort of slotted right in.
Cool. So you guys started writing the show and creating the story. What was the biggest hurdle in adapting a book that's, what, 900 pages long to a 70-minute show?
Oh, it was such a stupid idea. So the biggest, here's the problems I laid out for myself. It was like a really horrible writing exercise, frankly, was taking, so this is a brand new show for our new ensemble for the new season too. So what I decided to do was take who's available for the show and interested in it from the ensemble. So they gave me a set number of people that I had to write for. On top of that, already knew, and like some sort of open satire, I was like, all right, this is really precious material, so you got to take care of it. And you can't blow out arcs, right? You know, Eddie Stark, certain things happen to him. He's got to be a certain type of guy. You know, Bob Baranthian, same thing. Like, so you already know all these plot points that you have to hit and character types with a finite number of actors and this broad, sprawling thing, and you have to only make it between an hour and 15 and an hour and a half. It was a nightmare scenario for writing. And as someone who may or may not have been involved in it yourself, you're well aware of, we got the Act 3 about 2.5 weeks before it was go time. Yeah, I mean, it was a huge writing challenge. It was really like being in a class, like a thesis class, where they were like, okay, great, we're going to give you like a nearly impossible, and then also make it really funny, because the source material, mm-hmm. like, you can't fuck around with this story. People love this. I love this. Mm-hmm. And if it's not really, really funny, then it's going to die on its feet.
I noticed, because obviously I've read the script, that you had to distill certain plot lines into very... There were certain plot lines you obviously had to choose to follow and others that you could not explore as fully. I don't want to spoil anything about the show, so I'm not going to name specific characters. Was that kind of the process of determining what is the book really about and who has the more either interesting or important plot lines?
That was exactly it.
Yeah.
It's exactly it, because you have to deal with characters who, you know, in season four, you don't even really remember.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever think about Bob Baranthian? Not really, you know? Baratheon. I'm mixing up my own names from the books and the thing.
That was another question I had for you. I noticed some character names you kept the same, like obviously the Starks, but I noticed you changed Lannister to Clannisters, and there's a couple of other changes. Why are some character names changed and others are not?
If it is an easy transference into sort of a redneck version of that name,
okay,
then I'm all for it. You know, Robert goes into Bob really easy and things like that. If like I will ruin one, which is like Varys. It's just his name remains Varys, and also a little bit to a little degree, I think it's funny because coming from like mountain folk, I know that we do that. We name our, like, my brother's name is Theron.
Yeah,
and that's why, you know, like,
which translates
pretty easily to, you know, Theron Greyjoy.
Yeah,
so like we do that with weird names. So there is nothing weird about having bizarre names in this kind of culture. It's only the real names, you shorten those down and make them, and then of course Clannister was sort of a softball that there's no way you don't.
Yeah. Okay. So we've kind of set up the creation of the show. So here's my golden question, because this has been asked of me a lot. Who is the show aimed at? And if I have not seen or read Game of Thrones, will I enjoy it?
Yes. You absolutely will. We took a lot of care. It is aimed at people, obviously, that have seen Game of Thrones.
More so than have read the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've read the books, then you probably, A, have seen the show anyways, mm-hmm. and B, you're kind of ahead of the curve in the storyline stuff anyways, because storylines change between the books and the show, so you're already kind of in a weird confluence anyways there. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones, then yeah, you'll still enjoy it, and we made real careful care to make sure that happened, just because it was real difficult to make sure all the plot lines, like you were talking about, like to winnow them down so you're actually watching a show. Mm-hmm. You're not watching, because that was a real thing at the beginning too, when we decided to do the show. It was like, all right, are we going to do a whole series of like sketches and funny, you know, bits on Game of Thrones, which would be easy to do, but that's also the easy way out. Mm-hmm. Or are we going to actually put a show together which runs this whole gamut of characters, and, you know, you've got Catie Stark and that in this large crazy wig and leopard skin pants, and she's out there actually being just a redneck mom, and you're mm-hmm. like, let's do that.
Is it possible, if the show goes well, that we'll see a Clash of Kings and a Storm of Swords?
Absolutely.
And, a continuation down
yeah.
the line?
Yeah, that is absolutely the plan. Like, I 100% want to continue to pursue this. This is one of the best things I, by far, have personally ever done. And then just watching it, we did a tech last night, and I've seen this show so many times at this point through rehearsals, but I literally just sat and watched it. And it was the nicest thing to just sit and watch. And watching it, I was like, this is one of the best shows I've ever seen in Chicago. And I'm saying that, I've never said that about anything that I've written or directed. This isn't, you know, like the movie thing where every time an actor does a movie, they're like, yeah, man.
This thing, this I've ever done, Iron Man 2 is going to be just way better.
Yeah, I was really, like, when I did The Book of Eli, I knew I really topped every other thing I'd ever done. So much better than Man on Fire. And, yeah, it's not that. It's, I don't know why I chose Denzel Washington to go after.
Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman's in it. So.
Gary Oldman, yeah, safe. Yeah. That's a sit. Yeah, that's fair. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's fucking brilliant. I cool. love this show.
So, technical questions. When is the run? Where can people buy tickets? And how much do tickets range?
Okay. The run starts, it's all through November. It's Fridays and Saturdays at 8 o'clock at the Public House Theater. So, it's like Clark and Grace. And then we, you can buy tickets at thepubtheater.com. Theater's E-R. And where you just look us up would probably be the easiest way to do it. Tickets range for industry. So for a ticket, it's $20. If you're an industry person, then there is an industry discount as well. If you're somebody that's in performance or actor or whatever, public house theme all along being you don't want to actually take advantage of the people trying to create art in the sure, city. Sure. So we're always trying to. So there's always an industry discount.
As host, I've read the script and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see the show from afar. I'm also in the show, so I can't speak objectively, but I have had a blast being in it. So, dear listener, I would highly recommend that you come out and see it. I think it's going to be a fantastic time.
Yeah, because Chris is really, really, really funny in it.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's so stupid. Can you say any? Can I say which one of your characters, or would you rather me not?
You can say one of the characters.
Okay. I'll just say your Jeffrey is brilliant. If you come out for no other reason, come out and see Chris play Jeffrey. It's obscenely funny, man. I die every time you're out there by yourself. That's all I'll say.
It's pretty fun to distill a childlike villain down to his essence. So I will say that as an actor in the show.
That's all I'll say. I don't want to spoil anything else. No one spoil anything.
So I have two questions left to take us out.
Please.
Before we finish up. So I just recently released my Game of Thrones podcast. So listener, if you're listening to this, please go listen to that. It was a fantastic episode. Byron, you were not on that podcast, and I have a very interesting question that was brought up in that discussion that I want to pose to you. And this is going slightly off topic, but not too much. Character death in Game of Thrones. We talked a little bit about, is there a certain point where there is a portrayal of the author-reader relationship with George R.R. Martin? Because I feel that's one thing he's very well known for, is taking a beloved character and then killing them, as is very evident in the first season of Game of Thrones, which I won't spoil it, but you probably know who I'm talking about. Is there a point where it is too far? And I'll use this example. Let's take Arya, who is a fan favorite, who as of the recording of this podcast, is still alive and well and kicking. Is there a point where it's too much? Like, let's say he takes Arya and gives her a horrible, degrading death. What would that do to you as a reader? Because that's very within context of the world that he has constructed. Like, horrible things happen, unjust things happen all the time. Would that be too much? Is there a line that he can cross for you, or is there not?
Yeah, if it ceases to have narrative value, that I think is where it would cease.
Okay.
To cross a line for me, meaning when a character dies, like the Red Wedding. I won't refer to who or anything, sure. But like the Red Wedding happens. I never forget like reading that in the books. It was such, it did feel like a betrayal because of this character, but then you still have like, you know, the character at the wall, mm-hmm. who's part, right, as of now, part of that same family and stuff. And so narratively speaking, there are continuations of that sort of story arc, mm-hmm. storyline, and it doesn't feel gratuitous. Arya, I think, would feel gratuitous, mm-hmm. To be honest with you. I think that's...
If it was done in that way.
And done in that way, and I think that's why, unless you started to build her up into such a way that she was in, conflict and direct conflict and under direct threat, and was also trying to do something for her own self-gratification other than just get home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a really great question, by the way. And I am answering it more from a writer's standpoint than kind of a fan standpoint. But that's how I read.
Thank you for answering non-spoilery.
Yeah, oh, always, man. I'm super anti-spoiler. But, like, I feel like he does walk a really fine line of this sometimes. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's just not crossing that threshold of going in just gratuitous, then, you know, just you can't do it for shock value. It's got to have narrative value. Mm-hmm. And so far, you know, he's surprised us with things that feel
a bit shock value,
but then he comes narrative. Through and you're like, all right, I'm going to keep going because, you know, I did love this thing, but then I do see the value here. And because this person died, then this other thing happened where this other person I love and root for was allowed to flourish.
Okay.
And that kind of symbiotic relationship in the death of a narrative character is very important. And there have definitely been things I've read in the past, not from him. There have been things that have gratuitous deaths in them. And, you know, like movies are really guilty of that. A lot mm-hmm. of times Hollywood, to use that general term, gets confused about why to kill a character, it seems, sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they'll kill somebody because they're trying to make an emotional impact in the script. You know, like something big's got to happen at the end of Act 2. And I'm like, well, let's kill this butler character, you know, whatever.
Right.
And it's like, no, I think you misunderstand why you kill a character, why you try to make somebody attached and then mm-hmm. kill them. There's a reasoning behind that.
Okay. So. Well, it was an interesting discussion that came up in our last podcast.
I bet. That was
so
great.
That's why.
Did anybody side on the other side?
We'll talk.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll talk. Finally, is there anything else you want to say about Game of Mobile Homes?
Just proud of it. Come see it. Like, these guys have put so much work into it. From our stage fighting to the best wig array you'll probably see in any show in Chicago this year, to amazing costumings from Jen. It's phenomenal.
Great.
It's like, I love this show, and you will regret it for the rest of your life if you miss any of one of the 8's performances.
Well, sir, listener, if you're in the Chicago area, please check out Game of Mobile Homes, running every Friday and Saturday night, 8 p.m. at the Public House Theater here in Chicago. Byron, thank you so much for coming out.
Absolutely my pleasure. I love your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Oh, well, we'll get you in again sometime. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and chatting with me about Game of Mobile Homes has been
Byron Heckle.
Thank you, and remember, tornado season is coming.